The Anton Savage Show
with Kiries.ie
on News Talk.
I'm joined by journalist Lise Hand and Michelle Murphy, research and policy analyst at Social Justice Ireland. I think it's now de rigueur. Any weather forecast or weather reports from your journey in? Not too bad?
No, not so far, Anton.
Fine, good. All right, well, let us start with the stories making the news today. Front page of the Irish Examiner. Obesity, Lise, will be a disease of the past.
Yeah, this is an interesting, it's, I suppose, a good news story, which is always pleasant as well. I think this has a lot to do with the these claims that are made that obesity will be eradicated. I think a lot of it is around the introduction of game-changing new drugs, Ozempic, and which seem to be genuinely changing the way not only that obesity is tackled, but the way that it's perceived, because it's people. There's a whole swing away from this thing that, you know, fat people are fat because they eat too much and they don't exercise, and this has really reframed it as a medical problem that will be treated with medicine, and it's not necessarily people just not looking after themselves. And when you look at the stats, I mean, the statistics are amazing. I mean, 20% of children in Ireland are judged to be obese and 60% of adults, which is quite extraordinary.
That's one in five kids is obese.
Yeah, I think that stat is actually in that story there. And, you know, it's a problem. One in eight people globally suffer from it. I mean, this is, and one thing that really took me by surprise is one would assume that America is the problem with the biggest obesity problem, but apparently it's China. Mm-hmm. So, again, this is a massive global thing, but it hasn't been talked about because there's a lot of shame around it. Whereas now, once you couch this as a medical problem, it takes that shame away to a certain extent and reframes it. So you have people like Oprah Winfrey and so on now openly going on and starting. She's always been a massively to the fore about this whole obesity thing. She, you know, was the ambassador for Weight Watchers, I think it was, one of those organisations. And now she is openly talks about taking this weight loss drug. So I think on so many levels, this is a great story because it's dealing with something that causes massive health problems and it's taking the kind of shame and stigma away from this.
That thing of the shame and stigma, though, we are still, I would have thought, Michelle, a long way away from the mindset that says that obesity is a clinical disease rather than a behavioural weakness in the person.
I think so. And even Niamh Griffin's report here, she references Donal O'Shea. He was presenting at the IMO conference yesterday. And he's the person who's making the point about the drugs and saying we need to start treating it as a chronic condition, not a life. You know, saying to people you need to move more and eat less to an obese person, that's meaningless. It's a chronic condition. So that's why he says, you know, these drugs will be hugely effective. But he references last year a nurse in an obesity clinic saying to a patient, would you not just stop eating buns? I mean, that completely misses the point. It's not a lifestyle issue. It's still, I suppose, the fat shaming, the victim blaming sort of element. I still do think we have a very long way to go. But to me, it's, as Lee said, it's a really positive news story. I suppose the other element of this that I would be wondering is what's the cost of these drugs going to be to the state in the long term as well? Because the Growing Up in Ireland study would have shown that one in five children were obese, and there's a socioeconomic gradient to that. So those from lower income backgrounds are more likely to be obese. But then I suppose if you've that level of the population, I suppose what the HSE, or I'm sure Minister Pascal Donoghue will be looking at, given the overruns at the moment, what would the cost implications of these drugs be as well?
But it's interesting that thing of the socioeconomic spread, that you get a higher level of obesity in groups with lower income. Likewise, in that story, Donal O'Shea is saying that in part the access to the medicines may be linked to money, so that it'll be that obesity around the world may be ended for the rich.
Yes, and not for those on lower incomes, because if you have the income to pay for the drug, then you'll be able to access it. But if you don't, or it's the public-private healthcare things, if you're on a public waiting list for it, you'll be waiting for a couple of years. If you've private health insurance, you can access the drug, the consultant, whatever, much quicker. And so that would be a concern, that we should be trying to eliminate that. And, you know, that Growing Up in Ireland studying is really useful. Shows, you know, children's life outcomes from the day they were born up till 10 years of age. We should be using all that data. You know, I think Simon Harris is going to be talking about families tonight in his Ardesh address. We should be using that mine of data to improve people's lives, particularly improving children's lives. And he's talking about equality of opportunity. It's referenced in some of the papers today. Well, how are we going to deliver real equality of opportunity and equality of outcome for those children?
You mentioned he being Donal O'Shea, who is Professor Donal O'Shea, the clinical lead for obesity for the HSE. We actually did an extensive interview with him a while ago on exactly this topic. Here's a little bit of what he had to say.
We're at a point now in recognising obesity, attempting to structure prevention and attempting to structure treatment that is incredibly exciting, incredibly positive. The WHO have looked at what Ireland are doing and have said we would like Ireland to be a demonstrator site that other countries can come and look at.
So there you go. That's Donal O'Shea, the clinical lead from the HSE, speaking on the Anton Savage Show a while ago in relation to that story, front page of the Examiner, that obesity will be a disease of the past. And if you want to hear that entire interview, it, like all of our items, are up as podcast on the Anton Savage Show. Further updates, apparently, Leitrim, blowing a gale, 14 degrees. And in proof that you, what's the Lincoln thing of pleasing all of the people all of the time? One text that says, we're going to have a breezy day. Totally over the top reaction as usual. And the next one says, in other countries, this would be a hurricane. But we don't do hurricanes in Ireland. We just do high winds. Well, if you've updates, 53106 or 087-1400-106, you mentioned, Michelle, the speech that Simon Harris is going to be given at the Fine Gael Ordesh. Were this a usual standard Ordesh, there would still be a fair degree of pressure on the Fine Gael leader to say, OK, lads, you're heading into election mode. What can we expect of you? In this instance, he is the incoming Taoiseach with a very high bar set. What, first of all, Lise, let me get your view. What does he need to do to deliver on that high expectation?
What does he need to do? Well, I suppose the first thing he has to do is actually get elected Taoiseach next week. That's, I suppose, point number one. And he's very careful.
Can we not take that conclusion as foregone?
Well, yeah, but he is also, he might be young, but he's been around long enough to know that sometimes things don't always go according to plan. I mean, I do recall, I think the first time was it that Enda Kenny was due to be elected Taoiseach, and I think it took three goes before they managed to get. So, you know, he is being slightly careful about that. So I suppose first party unity, get his ship in order, and I think he will be trying to use the Ordesh this weekend to kind of put, you know, say that we are all, you know, ad idem, there's everybody's happy, there's not going to be any internal any strife. He'll try and put together...
Although that's relatively easy by comparison to some of his predecessors in the way. There's less blood on the walls than was the Fine Gael way.
Oh, Anton, this is absolutely the smoothest transition of all time. I mean, you know, there's... I mean, I did have a moment's thought for the political press corps in Leinster House being deprived of a heave, and then...
There's no crack in this at all.
No, I mean, zero crack. And then they were deprived of a leadership contest. I mean, at least the last one between Leo and Simon Coveney was actually quite lively. So we assume everything will go well and he'll be able to do some kind of reshuffle. He will then... I mean, he's faced with a Herculean task, because you can promise a lot, but trying to deliver on all the various things that they've said they'll deliver on, from, you know, sorting out the big one, of course, the big H, housing and homelessness, trying to, you know.
When you say that, I mean, that's the kind of thing where you say, sort out the big one.
Yeah, sort out.
But
yeah.
8 years into attempting, yeah. And tens of thousands of houses short of where they need to be.
Precisely.
And a year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's impossible. I think that he will probably get a pass if Fine Gael don't do well in the midterms and the European elections, because he'll only be in power about 60 days, or in the big chair about 60 days. So he probably will get a bit of a pass on that. Won't necessarily be blamed. But the next general election, which will happen within a year, will very much. And if he goes into it, as he probably will, with housing and the homeless issues still intractable and unsolved, that will come back to him, because, you know, they are the cornerstone of everything wrong. They're trying to, you know, fill new jobs, trying to woo back guards, trying to woo back teachers, trying to woo back nurses. And a lot of those aren't coming home because they literally simply have nowhere to live. It poses an existential threat to the multinationals coming in, because they're saying, well, where are we, we're going to bring in people, where are they going to live? Every, you know, and just actually giving the citizens of this country a fair shake, getting people, you know, young people out from their houses, getting the you know, the multiples homeless people off the street, dealing with the people seeking international protection.
And it has to be said, in a situation where even if they didn't have all of those challenges, there would still be fatigue creeping in at how long Fine Gael have now been in government.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they might get a bit of a wee bounce from Simon. And, you know, he's not short of energy. There's something of the Duracell bunny about him, you know, in the way that he kind of zips around the place talking very quickly. So he will bring a little bit of energy, but that will dissipate very quickly unless he's seen to actually start making differences. And you can wave around the law and order thing all he likes, but really, you're not going to get more boots on the ground and guards on the streets unless the guards have anywhere to live. They're not going to get, you know, you're not going to fill those 2,000 recruiting spaces that are going a begging at the moment.
So does this need to be then, Michelle, if he's making his big inaugural speech this afternoon? I think it is this afternoon, isn't it?
It's Saturday, half six this evening, I think. Mm. Yeah.
Does it need to be fire and brimstone and passion and a return to Fine Gael values? Does he need to set a realistic set of available targets? How do we measure whether this is good or bad?
Well, if you look at, I think there's two stories here. There's one in The Independent and one in the Daily Mail, and both sort of say he's going to look at resetting back to Fine Gael core values, be that enterprise, farming, law and order. I suppose he'll probably set some goals around those. Brian Mahan actually has a really interesting piece in the Daily Mail about just looking at Simon Harris and, you know, what he actually stands for and how it's really hard to pin that down. And that he asked him that the other week, and that he doesn't like labels, apparently. But I think it's going to be really hard for him, because one thing that he did reference and he has referenced is a new social contract. I mean, that's in the programme for government, so I don't really see what addition he's going to make to that one, and they're not delivering on that. Equality of opportunity. But what does he mean by equality of opportunity? Like, nobody in Fine Gael has spelled that out. He's talking about, I think tonight he's going to talk about supports for families, but what additional supports apart from those that were announced in the last budget, or is he going to be talking about the next budget? Supports for farmers, I mean, what does he mean there? He did reference the other week about climate change and the need to move towards, away from, like, I suppose, disaster planning to actually rolling out a roadmap. I mean, we've plenty of roadmaps. We don't really implement the policies. You know, now we have a crisis where, you know, the weather has been so bad. We're probably going to have a look at an issue of additional payments. But what's he going to do beyond that? And the same again with supports for business.
But is it sufficient for him to be able to promise and point to the delivery of an uptick on some of those trends? If the housing numbers improve a bit, if those kind of things of the homelessness numbers decrease a bit, if immigration decreases, but if he's able to show, look, we are changing this, is that enough?
No, because Darragh O'Brien is the Minister for Housing. He's certainly going to be jumping from the rooftops of the... He won't be burying them on a Friday of a bank holiday weekend again if the numbers go down. I can guarantee you that. They'll be out on a Monday morning. The same thing if there's changes in agriculture, it'll be Charlie McConnell who'll be out there. They're all with an eye to the next election. So I think that's what he will be as well. What can... I suppose his real eye will be to what voters have they lost? Can he try and get back between now and next March? And also between now and June, you've local and European elections coming up. Some of them are, particularly the border, Midlands North West, is going to be a very, very, very crowded field. Which is that every day you
bonkers,
open the
yeah.
paper, there's a different, and you, someone else running. We've Ciarán Mullooly running now, apparently, for Independent Ireland. His challenge is going to be, is he going to be able to woo back those voters who might have, you know, left Fine Gael? And also, how can he present the party? He's got less than a year as being rejuvenated. Something, as you say, like, they've government fatigue at this point. They've been in there for so long. They can't wheel out the thing that they've steadied the economy anymore, that, you know, they rescued us from the banking crisis. Like, those days are long gone. You've had a growing economy since 2016. You know, we're at full employment. We've recovered really well from the pandemic and Brexit. Still, people can't afford to move out from their family's home because they can't afford rent. You've 13,000 people homeless, record numbers of children homeless. We've international protection applicants sleeping in tents in the middle of Dublin city centre, which is appalling. You still, again, we have an overrun in the health service. Again, we've waiting lists. Services for children with disability almost non-existent. Problems with childcare. We've 2,000 vacancies in primary and post-primary teacher places. those are the things he's really going to have to deliver on if now, he's actually going to get a vote.
If you're in Fine Gael, Elise, will you not be saying, hang on a minute, health has always been a basket case. There's a worldwide problem with mass immigration that we're suffering from everybody else. And the start of that list was a list of very positive things. Full employment, growing economy, did well in the pandemic, did bend the Brexit. Will Fine Gael not be standing there filled with resentment saying, why are you not thanking?
Okay, I need to get over the idea of me being in Fine Gael for a start. So let me just try and get my head around that one.
Sorry for even suggesting it as a hypothetical premise.
So, well, Simon Harris would be of the gung-ho variety of leader. You know, we saw how he was sort of already throwing a few digs at Sinn Féin, you know, in his opening remarks and, you know, about claiming back the flag and all this kind of carry on. So he will be very much going out trying to accentuate the positive. And and I know this might sound a bit mad coming from, you know, somebody who would regard myself as a professional journalist, but actually sometimes an element of luck can come into it as well. You can be a lucky general. And I think that, I mean, and he really has been quite lucky to some extent. I mean, you know, the last general election was essentially called over him. Fine Gael didn't do very well, but then along came COVID, and he was able to sort of reinvent himself. And he was also then put in a brief where he was able to spend a lot of time going around the country and kind of rousing the grassroots.
And that's a good point with the luck with COVID, in that phase of COVID when we were all in it together, he was the minister, and by the time we all got out of it together, he wasn't.
Precisely. So, you know, and even there was so much attention, you know, that Sinn Féin obviously had been running the book on a unity poll and all that. And then, you know, you had this sort of extensive report come out this week sort of saying, well, that's fine if we want to get the fourth green field is going to cost us 20 bill a year. So, and he's already said it's not, you know, the North isn't going to, a unity poll is not going to be a priority. So I know it might sound odd, but I think the fall of the cards might actually be a factor in this as well before the next election. Says Mystic Lees.
We'll obviously be returning this tomorrow morning, and that's between 10 and 12 on the Anton Savage Show, because that speech will have been given, and undoubtedly it'll fill a lot of the Sundays. We were talking about that other story, that obesity is a thing of the past or may soon be a thing of the past. Text to say, obese people on Ozempic are creating a shortage for those with diabetes, for which the drug was originally invented. I was left short of my correct dosage for a year because of this. Another, I understand this obesity conversation completely, but can you answer this? Is there an example of a person who eats healthy and exercises who is obese? People need to take responsibility and stop looking for a reason to say it's not my fault. Now, Michelle, is that the equivalent of saying, is it possible to find an example of a person who doesn't drink any alcohol and is an alcoholic?
Well, I'm not a medical professional for a start when I go to answer that, but I suppose it goes to show how we view it, and it is a chronic condition, you know, and that's the problem. And I suppose that goes to Donal O'Shea's point. Our whole mindset in terms of how we view obesity really has to change as a nation, which goes to that texter there. I thought it was.
But there is a preventative bit in all of this. You are better not to smoke. You are better not to drink. You are better to eat healthy. But if you've gotten yourself to a position where you are addicted to alcohol, or where you have got a cancer by virtue of smoking, or where you are now obese, well, there's little point standing around saying, well, you kind of got yourself there, didn't you?
Yeah, but if you're one of the kids, right, from a low-income family and a supermarket loss leader, and all the studies in terms of calories will show the cheapest calories are also the worst calories for you. So that's the frozen food, all of that, which parents are buying, you know, in order to fill hungry little bellies. That it's not their fault, you know, that those are the cheapest calories, and that the things that are most healthy for you, the fruit, the vegetables, the fish, the meat, the dairy, are the most expensive things in the supermarket. So if we're really going to go down that road, then you could say, yes, when all things being equal, when fresh fruit, vegetable, fish, meat, dairy is exactly the same price as your frozen pizza, chips, chicken goujons, whatever it may be, then you can have that kind of discussion. But I think until you get to that point, you need to look at the more structural issues, the cost of food, the cost of healthy food, and then how you're going to provide that drug, those drugs or the future drugs to people on low incomes, and how you prevent those unintended consequences that the other texter mentioned, a person with diabetes who can't get the dosage they require because that drug is being diverted elsewhere.
Interesting text from a proud Norrie. Storm Kathleen seems to be in full effect in Cork City now, looking out the kitchen window, and it's like being at sea with the rain splashing on the glass, says Mike, brackets, Northside Cork, adds Mike.
Ah,
let's be very clear where Mike is.
Northside Cork, yes.
Front of the Irish Daily Mail, Lise, former 2FM DJ, I was wronged by RTE Chiefs. This is Keith Walsh, who is a regular contributor on The Hard Shoulder and a number of other programmes on this station. He was formerly the presenter of 2FM Breakfast. And what he is saying is that in his view, he was treated as a freelancer. So he was an external contractor into RTE. But he now maintains, hang on a minute, I was effectively an employee, and that means there is a bucket of benefits that I should have been had available to me, and it means that they shouldn't have been able to fire me. I should have been made redundant and given money. I would have thought most of RTE's frontline are freelance. Are they not?
Well, I was kind of, when I read this, I was like, ah, what is that sound I hear? It's the sound of a new can of worms opening. And I think this is precisely what this is. This, I mean, I have done, you know, just work going in and out, just like I'm doing now, in and out of RTE, like, you know, as a talking head. But I
much
do know
coming here, though, is what you're saying.
Oh, it's miles.
Yeah, it's what
the ambience is fabulous, and the temperature in here is just balmy. So it's yeah, and I do have enough, you know, I know an awful lot of people in RTE, you know, frontline staff, and I've never been able to figure out with many of them, our frontline workers, I should say, who's on this contract and what contract. And I know people who have been expressed disquiet and frustration to me because they're the uncertainty of their contractual status. And I did notice that Simon Harris did actually say this week that one of his ambitions is to end, quote unquote, the constant drama in RTE. And I think he's got probably a better chance of actually sorting out the housing crisis beforehand. But, you know,
is the problem not being solved by boredom, though? Have we not had so much of it, like turkey at Christmas? It may still be good for you, but we're done.
It is sort of death by a thousand paper cuts, you know, like the documentation piles up and so on. But, you know, the point is that there are potentially 700 of these potential cases that
of people who were
of bogus that are being investigated
be
for potentially bogus self-employment. Now, 700. So, and I think there's only something like a 20 million budget has been set aside to kind of deal with those, which is not going to possibly really cut it if there's potential 700 cases. Not to mention just the legal morass, the time it'll take, the air it'll suck up from dealing with other, you know, issues in the station and so on. And
how is there 700? Because my understanding of where all of these contracts originally started was there used to be a salary scale of presenter in an RTE. And once you got to the top of it, that was it. You couldn't get any more. And the top bods all said, well, OK, we'll go as freelance contractors and then we can charge you a pile of extra money. But there can't be 700 people in that situation.
I think it became very labyrinthine, is what I understand, where you had maybe issues where people were employed on one type of contract and then, you know, according to employment law, might have then gone on to a different kind of contract, but, you know, wasn't quite staff. And it, as I said, I've talked to many people over the years who just are quite confused about where they actually stood. And I think things like, and this was actually something, as far as I can remember, that that Keith Walsh actually mentioned, you know, he did mention the 450,000 payout that was given, the redundancy payout that was given to the former CFO, Breed O'Keefe. And I think it was just the numbers like that have rankled enormously with people who are trying to figure out where they stand in terms of their employment. And then they sort of see all these figures. And then you have, you know, I know there's a slight frivolity to the expenses story in terms of X hundred on flowers. And, you know, that also came out today in the Irish Times. But all those things are deeply upsetting to people who don't know where they stand, whether they're in full employment, in semi-employment, if their contract is going to be a rolling contract, can it be terminated at any stage? What exactly does it mean by self-employment? And for like the national broadcaster to operate in this sort of ad hoc kind of back of the envelope carry on is unacceptable.
Although presumably, Michelle, any broadcaster will say, look, our frontline presenter staff are all hired in a definitively Damoclean way. We'll pay them relatively well, but with the option to fire them at any given moment.
Well, I think the point here is, and I mean, that may be the case, I'm not a presenter, but you would imagine that in terms of employment law, and given how large RTE is, and given the executive that they have, they could at least get their employment contracts right. Because the problem is, you know, this is bogus self-employment. But when you look at the growth of platform work and precarious work, what does that mean? And it's not just an issue for RTE. For this person's entitled to social welfare, to sick leave, your pension and PRSI entitlements, you might be ongoing into RTE or any organisation. You might be happy to accept that now because you don't understand the long-term implications of that. But they are quite enormous. I think, as Lise pointed out, it's the headlines around the really, really, really large payouts for certain individuals, €175,000 credit card bill over 5 years, which is astronomical.
And that was one individual's credit card bill,
no,
wasn't
I think
it,
it's the bill for five. I think right, it's the bill, sorry. But it covers entertainment and things. It's five or six different individuals. But 56,000 was spent on basically bars, hotels and restaurants over 5 years. I mean, that's enormous. And then you say to someone who might have been on some sort of self-employment contract and now, you know, they're either not employed anymore, or you've Kevin Backhurst has been out saying, you know, we are going to have to look like at a streamlined RTE, a streamlined national broadcaster. So what does that mean for those people? Are they going to be looking for a new job? And what is that going to mean for them in the meantime if they're out of work, if they're not entitled to any job seekers benefit, for example? They still have to pay rent, bills, mortgage like everybody else.
It'll be interesting to see how much this ends up being a financial issue mm-hmm. for the broadcaster, because it is tens of millions, mm-hmm. as you say, that mm-hmm. are being discussed. Text to say, Harris, this being Simon Harris, is not believable. Simon Coveney would have made a far better Taoiseach. Pity, really. I might have voted Fine Gael next election, but now I won't. I voted Green last election, but never again. I might try Sinn Féin. 53106 at a cost of 30 cent, or 087-1400-106 if you want to get in touch for free on WhatsApp. Final thing before we go, Lise, there is a nice little story in one of the papers of the cheapest pint in Temple Bar. Did you see this?
I did, and I have to say I was massively disappointed by the story, because I thought you and I were going to sit here and talk about the cheapest pint in Ireland, and I would talk about that for the whole show, to be absolutely honest. I actually do think it is Johnny Moran's in Westport, by the way, if cheapest pint of Guinness. This is, I suppose you could almost call it a good news story, sort of. The cheapest pint in Temple Bar is actually a pint of maggots, and it's in the fabulous fishing tackle shop that has survived
miraculously.
It's like a mirage in a desert, you know. It's there since Temple Bar was a rackety old back street with, you know, a couple of old fellas pubs, and that was it. And there it is. And I think it's become a real tourist place. You know, people go and take photographs of it because it is quite extraordinary. You know, it's this fabulous shop that you can go and buy tackle, and the windows always got lots of interesting gizmos in it. I have no idea what they are, but they're great. But they are now saying that you can buy, they've been there, 64 years they've actually been trading there. And they're saying that you can buy a pint of maggots for a fiver. And they also sell live worms and frozen bait. So, I mean, if
sure,
you're...
Why would you touch the frozen
Well, you never
stuff.
Know. I'd say the odd stag has probably gone in there by accident thinking it was some kind of like theme bar and just run out of it then.
But it is remarkable that it's still there, isn't it?
Do you know, it's fabulous. Yeah, yeah. Brilliant. There should be more holdouts like it.
Guys, thank you so much. Lise Hand, journalist. Michelle Murphy, research and policy analyst at Social Justice Ireland.
The Anton Savage Show.
With Kiri's.ie.
On News Talk.